It's tough when you first leave a narcissistically abusive relationship without realizing it. Your partner has started to make more and more of the decisions, and over time, you've given up yourself, betraying yourself and your sense of safety. So how do we begin to rebuild trust after this kind of loss? Thank you so much for joining me today on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience and a narcissistic abuse survivor. In this episode, we're going to examine why reclaiming our self-integrity and learning to rely on our intuition is often challenging in the beginning. We're going to also talk about a few practical steps to start your healing journey. And by the way, if you missed it, the interview with Sandra L. Brown on November 10th went fantastic. And the replay video is now available for purchase. We're going to talk about a lot of her points that she made during that interview and in her work. I'm thrilled that you're here with me today. Remember to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss future episodes, and leave a review and let me know what you think of the show. And finally, thank you so much for your donation to this listener-supported podcast, because together we're shedding light on all things related to abuse. So with that said, let's listen into this replay of a TikTok Live. So today we're going to talk about recovery, trauma recovery after abuse, because that's something that a lot of us are struggling with. I had a conversation last night with a couple friends, and we were talking about our life now. Both of them are in a relationship. One is in kind of a new relationship. I just restarted trying to meet people to see if I can date. We got to talking about this process of how do we get into the realm of trusting ourselves to pick friends, to date, to take risks, to try new things after you've suffered such devastating experiences, after such negative experiences and abuse. Because abuse, narcissistic abuse specifically, is an erosion of your sense of self. This is one of the reasons why it's now thought of as one of the most damaging form of abuse, because not only does brain damage to us through the prolonged cognitive dissonance, but also that it is an erosion of our trust in ourself. I was reading Sandra Brown's book, Women Who Love Psychopath. I cannot say enough about that book. This is the author we'll be interviewing. This is what the webinar is about. It's going to be about predatory behavior, what happens in predatory behavior, who gets picked for by predators, why. By the way, most of what you hear, I'm sad to say, on these platforms is wrong. It's wrong. This woman has done 30 years of research, actively looking at the victim profiles, what makes us vulnerable, and why do predators pursue us? What is it they're looking for? She actually talked to them. She's worked with predators, and she's done huge studies. In the realm of psychology, you want a subject size of 30 people. That's when you know you've got something statistically significant. Hers was 600 couples. That means that her outcomes on her studies are reliable. It's a huge, huge sample size. She blew away most of what has been seen as norms about what makes the victim profile. So the things that you have heard, like, for example, oh, it's just you struggle setting boundaries. No, it's not. That's not the issue. Or if you heard someone say, you're just codependent and you came from a bad home, that's why you fell for this guy. No, that's not true either. So that's why I really want you to come to this webinar, is because you will learn so much about yourself and what made you vulnerable, so that you can go out and then do this differently going forward. Because it's not just about love relationships, frankly. These qualities of ourselves are things that shape everything that we do. It's what makes us successful and good team players, but it also are the things that then make us vulnerable in relationships, whether it's with families or with friends, or, you know, where you're at church or wherever else that you're doing things. It makes you vulnerable in general. So these are the things that is really important for you to know, so that you can protect yourself better everywhere in all relationships. One of the things she found was, she looked at this big study and she calls it pathological love relationship. She looked at all, and it was mostly women were her subjects, which is why it's gender specific. because she didn't feel it was accurately fair to apply this to both men and women, although I think there are some generalities that you can make. But what she found was that 90% of those who got caught up in an abusive relationship, 90% who suffered narcissistic abuse reported PTSD symptoms. They had post-traumatic stress symptoms. I'm sure you're not surprised. I'm sure most of you would say, oh yeah, I know that I'm struggling. But for those of you who don't really know what PTSD is or CPTSD, let's stop for a moment and define it because I think it's really, really important. So at first you have to, it takes an unusual event, something that's not a normal day event. So in other words, it can't be that you had a near miss on the road. It's got to be something a little more extreme than that. It has to be something that most people don't experience. So you have to have a traumatic experience. And then the mind, in a way to protect yourself, has a way of reacting to cope with what happened, what you experienced. It has to make sense of it. So it does some things in order to protect you when you're experiencing a traumatic event. One, for example, is you go into fight or flight mode. We've heard a lot about that, how your body gears up and prepares itself to meet the challenge. Your heart speeds up, your digestion stops, your blood pressure rises. Like if you were in the wild and you stumbled across a bear, you would need all of this physiological reaction to prepare you to run or hide or try to survive or whatever you're going to do in that situation. But what happens in these abusive relationships is we go into this fight or flight state, but it's a chronic state. It's because the threat is happens over and over for extended periods of time. So as a result, your body actually ends up getting stuck in this state. You get into a high kind of reactive state or a high arousal state, we call it. I struggle the word arousal because people tend to think of sex. We're not thinking of sex. We're just thinking about physiologically, your body's in a state of readiness to protect yourself. But you also are having a lot of an emotional interior experience. When someone is threatening you and scaring you or putting you into a bind that you can't get out or cutting you down, criticizing you, you're having an emotional and psychological experience. And the mind has to figure out how it's going to survive this attack. One of the things we tend to do is we numb out. We actually dissociate, which is where your mind mentally, your sense of reality, your sense of self, you sort of separate that from the moment. You kind of get out of yourself, out of your body, out of your head, out of your emotions. It kind of varies on the levels. You get this separation that happens as a way to protect yourself, and you numb, you're numbing, and you learn to do that. You kind of learn to go quiet and still. And part of that is, again, for survival, because if you think back to this, say you encounter a bear, you don't really want your anxiety to get in the way of you doing something to save yourself. It makes psychological sense why that happens. So as all this is happening, then you end up, when you're on the other side of the event, you need to process it and kind of understand what's happened. But what for a percentage of us, and interestingly enough, they say after most traumatic events, 60% of us recover well. But what Sandra Brown found in her research was 90% of people described this as traumatic, but 75% were not recovering well from it. Isn't that interesting? So here, if you look at Bessel van der Kolk's information, he would say, because I got to hear him speak, I heard him say in a seminar that only 40% get stuck normally after high trauma. But Sandra Brown's reporting of the victims of these pathological relationships, 75% of us struggle to recover. Isn't that interesting? Now, unfortunately, I don't know the why. There's a lot about this. This is a very new area of research, and she's one of the few people who's actually doing much active research in this area. So there's a lot we don't know. And that's one of the areas we don't know is why is it so difficult to recover? Although I think based upon me being a survivor of this, and hanging out with all of you who are survivors of this, I can make some good guesses why this is difficult. But what happens for us after trauma, when we start to try to reclaim our life and step back into the world again, there's some problems we run into. One is our body continues to be stuck in this fight or flight mode. We continue to be in this hypervigilant state. And as a result of that, that we continue to numb too much, we tend to be a little like dull to what we're feeling or knowing what we're going through. We also are continue to struggle with a body that's stuck in high arousal, and that shows up with sleep problems. You probably are having weight problems. You may be finding that you're startled easily. So you're having that kind of that hangover from this that's happened. I know for me, for example, I'm a childhood survivor of extreme trauma. And then when my first husband was diagnosed with cancer, I developed severe insomnia. Your body is stuck in this high state of arousal and you're struggling with all these issues. So you're numbing, you're hypervigilant because you're now like your body's stuck in this high alert state. You're having all these struggles and then you're having triggers where, so you have these breakthroughs where something happens. And it happened to me this week. Back to that discussion, I was talking to somebody last night and, oh no, it wasn't. I was having a business meeting with somebody and there was some drama going on at a business level in my life. And next thing I know, my hands are shaking and clammy. I'm acting like I'm going back to what happened to me with this narcissist. I'm acting as if it's happening all over again. And I could clammy hands and I'm barely able to cope. You have these moments where it just like unexpectedly in the places, the last place you need, you're being overwhelmed again by the situation. How are we going to recover our life? How do we heal enough so that we can make good decisions, like make new relationships and friendships, like get into dating life again, like renewing the things that we were doing before all this happened and we stopped doing it for whatever reasons, like re-entering the work world or whatever it is that you really want to do in your world? How do we then take this back for ourselves?
I had never felt more alone during the years that I'd spent in the abusive relationship. Shame and fear cut me off from the rest of the world and made it difficult to share what was going on. Are you going through something similar? If so, then you're going to want to read my book, Love You More, The Harrowing Tales of Lies, Sex Addiction, and Double Cross. It's a true story of what happened to me. You'll discover that you're not alone and that you'll find out also what it took for me to finally escape. You can buy the book at all the major online stores or buy it directly from me and get a discount. For info on where to get your copy, please see the link in my bio.
How do we stay safe? Now, interestingly enough, I just put out a video yesterday saying I was wrong, that I've been doing Sandra Brown's book, How to Spot Women Who Love Psychopaths, which I highly, highly recommend. And I know, by the way, it's expensive. Somebody commented on why does she charge so much? Well, it's packed with research. I'm sure this book took years to write. My book took 3 years to write, and it's my story. I can't imagine the amount of work that went into this book to put it together. One of the things that you've been hearing on social media, and I need to make a correction because we've been telling you wrong. We've been telling you that after you get out of these relationships, you have had a big course on toxic people and that you probably see things differently. And if you learn to trust your gut and really listen to yourself, then you'll make better choices. And interestingly enough, you all were telling us that's probably not true, that it wasn't working so well for you, but we kept saying the same thing. Well, Sandra Brown's research agrees with you. It isn't that simple. So I want to unpack why it's not that simple today. It's not simple because the PTSD and CPTSD is causing emotional numbing. That means you're really struggling to have a sense of what you're feeling in the moment. And a lot of us have mistaken our gut instinct or intuition for anxiety. They're very different things. What is it when it's intuition saying that you're in danger? And how does that differ from fear? And how does it differ from anxiety? Intuition, and not all of us are equally good at this, by the way. So if you have ever taken the Myers-Briggs inventory test, you may know whether or not you're a sensor or you're an intuitive. So sensors tend to pick up stuff around them using their senses. And people with intuition tend to somehow pick up on another level. I don't really get the difference, but we kind of know without knowing how we know. So if you're an I versus an S, you'd need to know that. I's or N's, I'm sorry, your N versus an S, that's the difference, sorry, N versus an S. N's on the Myers-Briggs tend to be a little bit better with intuition. Not necessarily, but just tend to be a little bit better. But the problem is most of us have been trained out of listening to our intuition. There's a really great book by Gavin DeBecker that Sandra Brown talks a lot about. Gavin DeBecker works with crime victims, serious crime victims, and he goes back and recreates the moments and when they knew something was wrong and what was it they picked up or didn't pick up, because he's trying to find a way to make us safer in general. And so it's a fascinating book called The Gift of Fear. I highly recommend it. Our problem is most of us have been taught early on not to trust our gut. We don't even know what the gut feels like. But what it is, and I know you've probably had these experiences, and that is it's when you have the hair raise on the back of your neck, or you start to have goosebumps, or you're having that twisted, funny, sick feeling in your stomach. Those are the moments where you know something's wrong, but your brain hasn't caught up enough to be able to tell you why it's wrong. You just know something isn't making sense. There was a victim in his book who survived a rape from a serial rapist who usually killed his victims, but she somehow got herself out of the situation and didn't get killed. He walked her back through the event, and there was a moment when the assault was over, and he left her alone and went to the kitchen, and she got the nerve. I don't know how she did this, because I don't know if I could have done this. She followed him out, snuck behind him, and then went past him for the door. And so Gavin DeBecker asked her what made her think to do that. Why did she do that? And she remembered back, and she remembered that he closed the bedroom window. It had been open. And somehow, she realized, without realizing, that he probably was going to kill her, and he wanted not to have any sounds escape the apartment. So something about her recognized the closing the window as a sign of danger, and that made her do the super brave thing of sneaking past down behind him and getting out of the house. Isn't that amazing? But most of the time, we've found a way to not really pay attention, or our fear of the circumstances or our anxiety is so hard that we often like talk ourselves out of it, and we end up not taking care of ourselves and protecting ourselves better. Which is really, so there's one problem. And the other problem is PTSD works against us. Again, as I mentioned, the emotional numbing makes it hard for us to know what we're feeling in the moment. So if we're not really registering what we're feeling in the moment, then how do we register whether or not someone's safe or not safe? So there's things that kind of come into that that make it hard. And then there's another factor, and I thought this was fascinating. One of the things that we don't evaluate about ourselves is how likely are we wanting social harmony? Are we a big advocate for a person who wants everything to go easy and not to cause conflict? Or are we somebody who doesn't mind being antagonistic? A lot of us who find ourselves in these relationships have the personality styles where we like to be agreeable. We like to be cooperative. We don't really like to cause problems. We go along. We're a good team member. We're a good teammate. Well, unfortunately, that correlates with a personality style called a low harm avoidant person, which means we tend not to be conflictual. We tend not to be very paranoid. We tend to assume good things about people and to not make waves. So that works against us. There's an analogy that Gavin DeBecker uses in his book, and then Sandra Brown talks about in her book as well. I bet you there's a scenario where, and I'm gonna put a video up on this. The scenario is you're alone at a hotel. You come up to an elevator. The elevator door opens, and there's a man standing in it and standing by himself. And he says to you, "I'm going up," and you are too. Something says to you in that moment, "Don't get on." There's something off about this guy. You don't know why. You really don't know why, but your gut says, "Don't get on." And you know that if you refuse, you're going to have to say to him, you're indicating to him that something's wrong with him and that you know something's wrong with him. And that's socially embarrassing. You're going to make him uncomfortable. A lot of us, especially those of us who've been victims of abuse, would go ahead and get on the elevator because we don't like making people feel bad. We're more likely to risk ourselves than to confront the other person and face the awkwardness of that situation. I don't know how many times in my relationship with my ex, when there was a moment where he put me on the spot, where I had to, if I said something, let me give you for instance. So we had his niece come visit and I paid for her ticket. She didn't have the money and we wanted her to come for a visit, and the ticket to go home had been bought. One day ahead, her grandmother passes away, and she knew her grandmother was ill, but one day ahead, her grandmother passed away and she wanted to go home. That meant I had to buy a new ticket. He asked me, would you send her home? Can you pay for another ticket and send her home? I wanted to say, she can wait a day. I know it's bad, but she's not going to miss the funeral. It's a couple days away. This was what happened. She made the choice to come with grandma sick. It's a decision she made. That was a risk she took. And I also wanted to say, or I don't mind her going home, but I'm not paying for it. She can pay for it, or maybe family can pay for it. Maybe you can find the money and pay for it, as long as it's not my money, but I'm not paying for it. But you know what? I didn't. Though I was furious as hell, I went ahead and paid for it because I didn't want to rock the boat. Now, how many times is that similar situation happened to you, where you got put in a position where you knew that the stance that's more protective of you, more reasonable of you, made you look bad, made you look like a bitch, made you look mean, made you look insensitive, wasn't socially appropriate, but you knew it was the right decision because it was the safer decision, but you didn't have it in you to sort of tolerate whatever that is that we feel. We didn't do it. So that we end up then opting into the direction of what's not in our best advantage. We essentially get on the elevator with somebody who probably is dangerous. So all of these factors, I know I've identified three factors, work against us after recovery from abuse. So what do we do about that? How do we then, if we're numbing, we're not good at harm avoidance, not very self-protective, and if we tend to be, what was the first one that I mentioned? Yeah, we're struggling with PTSD, we have the personality who's nice and easygoing, and we're not really well in touch with ourselves, so then how do we get better at protecting ourselves in general? How do we then move on the other side of this and start to spot craziness and spot dangerousness? That's a challenge all of us are facing. And unfortunately, the research isn't out there yet. There isn't enough. Like I said, this is a very new topic and there's not a lot talked about it. So there's not a lot other than we need to really come to know ourselves. We need to really get in touch with our feelings. We need to begin really actively working on calming our nervous systems down. We need to recognize our vulnerabilities and where we're bad at setting good protective measures for ourselves. I don't want to say boundaries because I think you can have good boundaries, but when you're put in that bad spot, it's very hard to be unpleasant. Well, we need to be practicing at becoming unpleasant and becoming comfortable with putting ourselves first. These are all things that are not natural to our personality style, which is again why I think it's so important for you guys to come to the webinars, because these are the things we're going to be talking about. What makes us at risk for being selected, which is not codependency, not boundary issues, and how can we work against our hardwiring, our personality hardwiring, in order for us to be better at taking better care of ourselves and then picking up and spotting predators before we get into the next relationship, whether it's with our family, with our friends, at the job, or in a romantic relationship. So one of the things I'm doing, so let me tell you, because I can't say just do A, B, C and make it better for you, but one of the things I want to tell you is notice when you're numbing out. Get really good at identifying when you're getting triggered. Work with somebody to help you around those issues, like get EMDR, see a coach, see a therapist, start to get help so that you can get better at managing your overwhelm, your high arousal from having been gone through something very traumatic. That's one thing that really helps. Take assertiveness training. Practice being assertive and being unlikable in small, easy situations like the cashier at the grocery store, or someone trying to help you at the gas pump, or some moment that is a throwaway moment that you'll never have to face this person again. Practice at saying no and doing the uncomfortable thing that would protect you that you typically don't do because you're just so used to being nice. Really take those steps and work at that. getting in touch with your feelings. Really know what you're feeling and when you're feeling it. That's hard for me. One of the things I did, I found, and you can find it online, it's really easy. Find a big feeling list, a big, huge list of all the possible feelings. Atlas of the Heart, Brené Brown's a really great resource if you want to buy a book, but you can just get a sheet of feelings. They're all over the internet. And set a timer during the day, throughout the day, like maybe 4 times a day, just have it go off. And the assignment for yourself is to say, what am I feeling? I need to identify 2 to 3 feelings. And it can't be I'm tired and bored. Don't let those be your cop-outs. But practice at learning to identify subtle feelings like, I'm feeling a little awkward, or, you know, I'm feeling embarrassed. Like earlier, somebody said I was talking too fast. And if you watched my face, you saw me blush. I knew I was feeling a little bit of shame and feeling bad that I was talking too fast for somebody and making them having a hard time keeping up. I get triggered too. And when I get triggered, I talk faster. Get good at identifying your feelings so that you're not dissociating and numbing out. Figure out what your triggers are and work through them with working through a coach or an EMDR specialist so that they're not such severe triggers. Discover your personality traits. Find out if you're high in agreeableness and conscientiousness. And then, like I said, come to the webinar and learn why those qualities, although fantastic qualities, what we would call super traits, work against you when it comes to predatory people, because they're looking for that in you. That's what makes you vulnerable. So those are some ways in which you can begin to sort of reclaim and start to heal and learn to get better. And the other thing is make sure you surround yourself with people who are healthy people. Because one of the things I had to do was I had to clean house with my friendships. I found out that I'd surrounded myself with a lot of toxic people, and I didn't really realize it because I'd gotten used to it, so that I didn't know that there was just lots of not good people in my life. But get a good support system and then run things past them. This is really hard for me too. I have a lot of shame. I'm aware of my shame. It doesn't overwhelm me. I can even tell you I felt shame a few minutes ago. I'm not undone by that. What I did find shameful was when I met somebody and I was missing some of the red flags, I felt bad that they had them, like it was my fault that they had these problems. Now I'm realizing, you know what? That's them. That has nothing to do with me. I have no ownership over their bad decisions or their funny lifestyle. So now when I have a friend, I can say, hey, I just met somebody and this person told me these things about them. So what do you think? Is that a red flag? Or should I like wait and see? Or should I like block this person today? Now I seek input out a lot better because I'm not so anxious about what people think just because somebody I happened to met had that quality. For some reason, my boundaries were really permeable and way out there with other people. So these are the things that you sort of learn about yourself. And when you learn your bents and your biases, you can work against them.
Wow. Well, that was a lot today. I want to ask you a tough question. How is your healing going? I've been thinking a lot about those first early days after I left the bad marriage, how confused I felt, the intense pain I had. One of the things that I did that was the best decision I had made at the time was to jump into an online group for survivors. These other women became my lifeblood. I scheduled my week around those appointments because I felt like this was a group of people who understood what I was going through. The camaraderie and safety I felt there was so healing. So that's why I started a group of my own called Toxic Free Relationship Club. It's now hosted on Facebook, and the entry into it has also changed. If you'd like to become a member, please join by becoming a subscriber on Ko-fi. Once you join, you'll receive an invitation to the group where you'll not only receive the online support, but also steep discounts on my resources and a monthly group video chat. If you'd like more information, please see the show notes for the link. And I will see you back in a week, and I hope that your holidays over the Thanksgiving is wonderful and blessed. And until Monday of next week, bye-bye.